May it please the court, my name is William Chang of Morgan Lewis & Bacchius, here on behalf of petitioner Daisy Construction Company, which represented itself pro se in the proceedings below. Your honors, we're here today because the ALJ affirmed a willful violation of the trenching regulations, not based on the record as a whole as required by American Wrecking and Dayton Tire, but based on select portions that inaccurately portray Daisy as an employer that intentionally disregards the safety trenching rules. The ALJ did not adequately consider, in fact, sometimes entirely ignored, evidence inconsistent with that picture, including evidence of Daisy's good faith efforts to comply with those rules. Moreover, several of the ALJ's central findings.
The ALJ is correct concerning his finding relating to Del Señor. Isn't that the end of the case?
It is not, Your Honor. Well, it depends.
What I mean is Del Señor is a senior fellow. The ALJ finds that he is present during the trenching, that he sees people in the trench, and that he does not do anything about it.
Yes, Your Honor, that finding was central to the ALJ's willfulness classification, and that finding highlights why that classification cannot stand under American Wrecking and Dayton Tire, because the ALJ overlooked contrary evidence. That finding, that Del Signore ordered workers to enter a non-compliant trench, can only stand and only depends on Mr. Drake's testimony that the digging began at 8 a.m. But Mr. Cannon, who is a third-party witness who was there the whole time, who the ALJ actually relied on, had testified the digging started at 9:30. Del Signore, according to the ALJ, was there around 9:30 to 9:50. So if Cannon were to be believed, then Del Signore did not order workers, even assuming that he did not order workers into a non-compliant trench. At the very least, under American Wrecking and Dayton Tire, the ALJ was required, he must adequately consider anything that fairly detracts from the weight of the evidence as he sees it. That didn't happen here. Lead to the second point. The ALJ also relied on testimony that Del Signore came back and forth into approximately three hours from that time, about 10:30 to 1:15. And based on that, the ALJ again concludes that Del Signore must have known that at some point workers were in a non-compliant trench. It did nothing. Again, that's speculation not based on evidence, which caused this court in Dayton Tire to vacate the willful classification. If the secretary wanted
it's based on evidence. It's based on evidence.
I think it's based on speculation for this reason, Your Honor. It was the secretary's burden to prove willful. We don't have any evidence. First of all, it's disputed whether he did go back there, but let's just assume that he was going back and forth during that time. There's no evidence of when he went back there. Drake actually testified, I can't be sure what time, I just know he did. Mr. Cannon, who was there the whole time, after repeated questioning from the secretary, said, I can't be certain he went back. But even assuming he did drive back and forth, there's no evidence of when, how deep the trench was, if he did come back to that particular excavation site, and what he could see from whatever angle he was standing on. It was the secretary's burden to show that, and she did not, and therefore the ALJ incorrectly relied on speculation, not evidence, that it was non-compliant.
Raise good faith below.
In the PDR, we did challenge the willful citation. We didn't use the words good faith.
You didn't raise good faith below.
You
either raised it or you didn't. You didn't, right?
I would disagree with that.
Well, you're now trying to infer something in a way that you're attacking the other side for inferring something. Huh?
No.
Good faith was not presented as a precise theory below, right?
We didn't use those exact words. I agree with that, Your Honor, but this is why I don't think that matters for a waiver issue. First, Daisy was represented pro se.
Pro se, what good is that? This is a corporation. This is not a defendant in a criminal case. You're not telling me that a corporation can get away with waiving down below and then hire Morgan Lewis and Bacchius to come into the Court of Appeals and say, my client isn't responsible because the client was pro se.
Your Honor, that's not the only thing I'm saying.
I think that's the worst thing you're saying.
It was the first thing you said, too.
Yeah. I suppose if you were representing General Motors, you would take the position, well, General Motors was pro se down below.
I said that in conjunction with the fact that that Daisy did not use the words good faith. I want to follow up on what the rest of that thought. Willfulness, as this court has said in American Wrecking, willfulness cannot exist if there's good faith. And Falcon, which the Secretary cited in the briefs, explains again, the concepts are two sides of the same coin. So by challenging willfulness, necessarily good faith is part of that whole argument. So even though we didn't use the words, we did argue the concept, and we did argue that Daisy took steps to comply with the trenching regulations.
Without fighting over the various evidentiary and testimonial questions, would you concede if the ALJ properly or legitimately held or found that Del Señor was present when people were in the trench and the trench didn't have the box, that that's enough to satisfy the case?
I disagree, Your Honor, because his finding was that Del Señor ordered people into a non-compliant trench.
Yes, my question is, if his finding is sustained on appeal, is that the end of your case?
That he had them enter a non-compliant trench, I do, not necessarily, Your Honor, because there's also evidence of other good faith efforts by Daisy that needed to be weighed, but that was not weighed.
Well, you have a problem there, because even the various cases indicate that it doesn't matter what the background of the company is. If the senior person is watching while there's a violation, that's enough to make it willful.
Your Honor, I disagree. And I would
disagree with which?
The idea that it's the end of the case if a supervisory misconduct is imputable to the
more than
corporation.
A supervisor. Del Señor is fairly senior, isn't he?
He's the operations manager, but that day he was filling up Dathan Booth, who was the superintendent for that project.
So he's doing both?
Yes.
Yes.
He's even bigger.
But, Your Honors, the case law is clear, including the cases that the Secretary cites. Even willful misconduct by a supervisor is only imputable to the employer. It satisfies the Secretary's initial burden, or prima facie case, which then could be defeated. The willful classification can then be defeated by evidence of the employer's good faith efforts to comply with the trenching rules. And I wanted to address the three other evidence that the ALJ did not consider, the most critical pieces. First, it's undisputed that Mr. Maruca, the project manager, went there that morning and told Foreman Drake that a trench box was needed and it should be used. Undisputed.
He had something else to say that morning too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And I was going to get to my second point. Instead of addressing that testimony, the ALJ relies on testimony on the very same page where apparently, allegedly, he said, get this done before the state inspector comes back. We don't know what that means, but...
It means that you better move pretty quickly.
It could be taken to mean that, but you have to address the evidence that comes before and right after that testimony. Before, Dre testifies.
Counsel,
no undue pressure.
You're making an argument that an ALJ has to consider every bit of evidence in the whole case. I don't recall any Court of Appeals ever holding that.
Your Honor,
you're right. The whole record is on review. But you can't challenge an ALJ by saying he must have specifically in hoc verba referred to every bit of evidence in the case.
Then that is not Daisy's argument. Our argument is that the ALJ must adequately consider anything that fairly detracts from the weight of the evidence.
Well, he thought Del Señor wasn't telling the truth. He did say that, didn't he?
He did, but he didn't address that. Yes, Your Honor.
Comes pretty close to the end of the case.
But not with respect to willfulness, because his willfulness discussion, the ALJ's willfulness discussion, relies heavily on the fact that he believed Del Señor ordered workers into a non-compliant trench. You don't need to believe what Del Señor said to find error of that finding. All you have to do is look at Mike Cannon's testimony, which the ALJ had credited throughout the other portions of...
You mean with respect to the time?
Yes.
But he's the only one who says 9:30. Everybody else says 8 o'clock.
Well, that's not true. Only Mr. Drake says 8 o'clock.
Well, Drake is the key witness. He was there.
So was Mike Cannon. It was testified. He was there watching the thing the whole time.
Well, that's sort of puzzling. One person says the digging starts at 8 o'clock, and the other person says, what does he say, Cannon says about
9:30.
He says it started at 9:30?
The digging started at 9:30. He says he arrived at 8:30. The digging started later. When the secretary asked when did it start, he said about 9:30.
So there's a discrepancy.
There's a discrepancy.
So the ALJ has to believe one or the other, right?
Yes, he has to address contrary evidence. And here, this isn't just any piece of evidence, as your honor saying.
He said he believes Drake.
Well, he didn't even address Mike Cannon's testimony. And keep in mind that the ALJ actually credited Mike Cannon's testimony
on another
places. Yes. And in Dayton Tire, I think one of the problems this court found with the proceedings below is that the ALJ had credited one portion of a witness's testimony, but not another portion without explaining it. Here it's even worse. The ALJ doesn't even address that other portion that's contrary to a key finding. I just want to address two more points before I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You don't have
that was cute. At least you smiled when you said it.
Well, I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. Louise Betts for the Secretary of Labor. May it please the court. The only issues properly before the court today are whether Daisy has proven the affirmative defense of unpreventable employee misconduct, and whether the violations Daisy admits committing were properly classified as willful.
I suggest you address the latter point first, because that's the point that counsel relied on most heavily.
Certainly. I apologize. I've got
you can reach down and get a drink at any point without being teased on television for doing it.
That's right. With respect to the willful classification, under a well-established case law, two supervisors' conscious disregard of OSHA's trenching requirements constitutes their willful violations of the requirements, particularly in this case, given their heightened awareness of OSHA's trenching standards. Those supervisors' willful violations are properly imputed to the employer.
But what focus on counsel's argument. His fundamental argument is the ALJ did not consider Cannon's testimony that the digging started at 9:30.
Certainly, Your Honor. The ALJ did note in footnote 12 of the decision that Foreman Drake's testimony was largely consistent with the testimony of Mike Cannon. The ALJ also determined that, as Your Honor mentioned, Mr. Drake's testimony was particularly credible. In this case, there was clearly some discrepancy about the exact timing of the digging. These were employees giving estimates of when they thought things happened in the morning. It doesn't really matter here when precisely the digging took place. We have two employees who testified, and both employees were found by the ALJ to be credible, that Mr. Del Signore observed workers in the trench when it was non-compliant. Mr. Drake testified to that point on multiple occasions. He testified that while the trench was non-compliant, Mr. Del Signore was back and forth to the work site observing workers inside the trench. Although he said he couldn't say what precise times he was there, he never recanted his testimony that at various points during the three-hour period he was there observing workers in the non-compliant trench.
And who was the other employee?
Mr. Cannon. Not a Daisy employee, but an employee right. of another employer, testified that when Mr. Del Signore observed the workers in the trench, there should have been a trench box in place because of the trench's depth. The ALJ properly relied on that testimony in concluding that Mr. Del Signore observed workers in a non-compliant trench. And I do agree with Your Honor that that is the end of the case here if this court sustains that determination by the ALJ. Good faith doesn't help the employer here for two reasons. First, because it was plainly waived. Daisy seems to suggest that the ALJ should have sua sponte determined whether Daisy was entitled to a good faith defense, even though Daisy didn't raise it at the ALJ level. Not only did Daisy not raise it to the ALJ, but Daisy didn't point that out as an ALJ error in its petition for discretionary review to the commission. Under 29 U.S. Code Section 660, they've waived the argument, and this court can't consider it. Even if the good faith argument, which is a defense, was properly in front of the court, Daisy has failed to prove that good faith should excuse its willful violations here. The doctrine of good faith essentially requires the employer to show that it took the same steps it needed to take to establish the unpreventable employee misconduct defense, that it had a safety program that was adequate to prevent the kind of willful violations by its supervisors that took place here. The only case Daisy cites for the proposition that something else is required to prove good faith was a reversed decision by the commission. The commission subsequently made clear in its Reynolds decision that essentially the factors that prove unpreventable employee misconduct are the same factors that an employer would need to show to prove good faith. All of the cases here establish that to show good faith, Daisy would have needed to show that it had an adequate safety policy, that it communicated the policy to its employees, that it enforced violations of its rules when employees committed them, and that it disciplined its employees for committing violations. If I could turn to the unpreventable employee misconduct defense, none of those elements were met here. It's a four-pronged defense, and I should say the first element of having a work rule the government does not contest, but this is a four-pronged defense. The other three elements are not met here. Daisy failed to adequately communicate its work rules to its employees. This requires Daisy to train not only its supervisory employees, but its non-supervisory employees as well, as the Fifth Circuit explained in the Floyd S. Pike case, so that non-supervisory employees are in a position to object to instructions by their supervisors to engage in unsafe conduct. And very tellingly here, the employee in the trench exposed to the unsafe condition here, Michael Moore, was barely trained at all by Daisy. He allegedly received only one toolbox talk in trenching safety. We don't know how long it was or what specific content it included. And we have testimony by the compliance officer that it was probably just a 5 to 10 minute talk. Typically, that's what a toolbox talk is. He testified that he had no other training but only received on-the-job experience. Again, under well-established commission case law, on-the-job experience is not enough. An employer can't simply assume that because employees have experience that they're well-trained. Moreover, the record reflects that Daisy provided no training whatsoever to Bill King, the excavator operator on site, who also clearly needed to be educated in trenching safety. Accordingly, because this element of the unpreventable employee misconduct defense is clearly not met, the defense fails here. The third element, Daisy also failed to make a diligent effort to discover violations. When asked for evidence of its efforts in discovery, it produced only two inspections of its project over a three-year history. It produced a blank trenching inspection checklist, but didn't produce any checklists that were filled out. Although it should have received completing trenching safety checklists from its foreman on a weekly basis, it didn't have any completed trench lists to present, and its own operations director, Mr. Del Signore, had never seen it before. Because Daisy failed to take diligent efforts to uncover violations, this is another reason that its unpreventable employee misconduct defense fails. The testimony by its superintendent that he made rounds to the work sites to look for violations doesn't overcome the lack of documentary evidence here. As the First Circuit held in Joyoso 1 and 2, where employers' supervisors testify that they've done inspections, but the employer can't document them, an administrative law judge is entitled to rely on the lack of documentary evidence as evidence that the inspections didn't take place and were inadequate to satisfy the employer's burden of proof. Finally, on unpreventable employee misconduct, Daisy failed to enforce the violations. Quite briefly, they had no discipline policy. They had never disciplined any employees before, despite evidence in this record that its employees had committed multiple safety violations, including trenching violations, on past occasions.
Let me ask you about the burden here.
Yes, Your Honor. I was just going to turn to that.
Okay. because there seems to be an argument that you know, whether this is an affirmative defense, and a claim that under Third Circuit precedent, which is where this occurred, the violation occurred, as I understand it, that the burden would be on the Secretary.
Yes, Your Honor. The burden is not on the Secretary here for at least two reasons. First, because DAISY waived its burden of proof argument. In its petition for discretionary review, not only did DAISY fail to object to the burden of proof or to raise burden of proof as an issue on page 4 of DAISY's petition for discretionary review, it in fact characterizes unpreventable employee misconduct as a defense. Even if the issue weren't waived, it's not on point in this case for two reasons. First, only some courts have held that the Secretary should ever have the burden of proving unpreventable employee misconduct. This is not one of those courts. Although the Third Circuit has adopted this doctrine, the Secretary disagrees with it. The courts that have adopted the doctrine have held that where the only inference of employer knowledge is a supervisor's knowledge of his own misconduct, for the Secretary to meet her prima facie burden of proving knowledge, she has to show that the supervisor's misconduct was unforeseeable. In this case, because DAISY hasn't challenged the knowledge element of the Secretary's prima facie case, even if this court were to adopt that line of supervisory misconduct cases, such as been adopted in Pennsylvania Power and Light and the other cases cited by DAISY in its brief, it wouldn't affect the outcome here. Finally, even if it were on point, even if it affected the outcome, even if this court wanted to adopt that doctrine, it shouldn't affect the outcome of the decision here because the ALJ correctly held that whoever has the burden of proof, the evidence in this case plainly demonstrates that the four-prong unpreventable employee misconduct test has not been met. There are no further questions. The Secretary respectfully requests this court to deny the petition for review and affirm the final order of the Commission.
Thank you, Ms. Betts.
Thank you.
Mr. Ching, I think you didn't have any time left, but we'll give you 1 minute of rebuttal.
Thank you, Honor. I'll just make a few key points. First, Mr. Drake did not testify that there had been prior noncompliance. The testimony is very clear. He said unprotected, and for the reasons I explained before, that's not sufficient to get the ALJ where he needs to get. The same thing with Cannon. Even though he testified, depths. There's no further testimony. What did he mean by depths? Even the ocean inspectors themselves can't just issue citations by writing depths. They have to actually take measurements to show that it was deeper than 5 feet. With respect to good faith versus unpreventable, the important distinction to note is that they both look at the same actions, but with good faith, it doesn't need to be entirely effective. It doesn't even need to be complete. The Secretary cited cases say that. So even if this court finds that unpreventable employee misconduct does not stand here, there's ample evidence of DAISY's good faith efforts to vacate the willful classification. We ask this court to grant the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.
You're welcome.